Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversations. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines. My guest today is Chris Vanover, co-founder of Audit Club. How are you today, Chris?
I'm doing fantastic, Liz. Thanks for having me on your show. Looking forward to the conversation.
Well, great. I'm looking forward to hearing all about Audit Club and the things that you're doing.
Absolutely.
Now, public accounting in general has been really slow to change, and audit has been especially resistant to change. But Audit Club is offering something completely different. Can you give listeners a brief description of what you're doing?
Absolutely. Yeah. So Audit Club is actually an audit service center for CPA firms and companies, really trying to help them get their audit-related needs just done. So we went to market a few years ago, launched in about 2019, really with the mission to make accounting and auditing better. And that first effort into the market was actually working with managing partners and audit partners in charge, primarily in the areas of quality control, whether that was a pre-issuance review, a post-issuance inspection, technical consultations, kind of a national office on demand for local and regional firms. As we obviously provided those services, firms started to ask what more we could do. And that's when we started to get inquiries around, hey, I just lost my audit manager or my audit partner or audit director. I'm a local firm. I don't know where to turn to for talent in today's marketplace. Could you guys possibly help us out with that? So we started to obviously review work papers, and we've kind of expanded the service offerings more recently into what we call our Audit Club crew passes. And that actually provides fractional support, even at the lower levels, anywhere from 1 to 3 years of experience to somebody with 4 to 6 years of experience. So we've really created a full service solution that audit firms, CPA firms, and just companies can tap into to get the accountants and auditors they want, but providing that fractional flexibility they really need today.
Well, that's great. Now, besides offering your audit services as a service center approach, you're also offering your services as a subscription rather than the traditional trading dollars for hours. How does that work?
Yeah, it's. I love the question. It's an area we did struggle with initially because, as you probably know, a lot of the CPA firms out there are a little bit antiquated in how they think. And so inevitably, we went out to the market with a subscription offering, and they quickly asked, well, what is rate per hour and how many bill hours am I getting? So as a new firm, just trying to survive and get a foothold, we obviously acquiesced. More recently, about last summer, we pivoted to that actual subscription model, where we basically provide weekly access passes and sell them under a subscription basis, where a firm pays a flat investment each week, depending upon the level of crew or chief that they're looking for. And then they invest that money, and then we focus on just delivering them solutions. So we don't actually report out billable hours. We start the day with what we call Audit Club Connect, where we actually are speaking virtually with the CPA firm partner or manager and saying, hey, what can we do today to help get you guys solutions that you need? Then we get to work, and at the end of the day, we submit what we call a solution scorecard that actually outlines what we actually accomplished that day, as well as some best practices and some observations. That really becomes a value report. What I like about the subscription model is that it actually puts a inherent pressure on our team to constantly perform at their best, because we are 1 week away from having no clients. And that's a little bit of a scary proposition to have, but it also propels people to actually perform at their highest level.
Well, that's really cool. And I like that you offer your services just on a weekly basis, because I know from my experience doing audit, sometimes you didn't really know until the day of the audit that you were going to need some extra hands.
That's right. Absolutely. And it's one of those, you know, as we studied our customers and members, as we call them, and learned more about how they work, if you know anything about the CPA firm world, which I know you do, Liz, they are definitely, they're challenged when it comes to actually figuring out what they have to do and when they have to do it. They have a general sense, but they cannot plan a month out. They cannot plan a year out. And so giving them that week-to-week flexibility has really opened up another avenue for us just to be able to be there more from a concierge approach, saying, hey, how can we help you today? And like I said, every week we have to perform at our best. Otherwise, we run the risk of losing them as a member with Audit Club.
That really puts a lot of incentive on you and your team to really work hard. Now, accounting firms around the world have been struggling to find talent, especially since the pandemic. Has that been a problem for you?
I know people are going to probably second guess this, but it has not been a problem for us. And it goes back to our mission to make accounting and auditing better. Our first foray out there was obviously trying to help improve the quality of the work papers, the reports, the audits, the reviews, the compilations that firms were doing, helping them through peer review, helping them through a PCAOB inspection, whatever it was to help them elevate their quality journey. That was the fundamental mission of Audit Club from day one. The other part of it is not only just firm focused, but it's also people focused. So by moving to this subscription access model, what we've actually been able to do is carve out a 9-to-5 access model Monday through Thursday. And in doing so, all of our people that are employed with us actually work a maximum 36-hour, 4-day work week throughout the year. That has been eye-opening and game-changing for a lot of candidates who see it on paper and they don't believe it. But the minute they get in here, they still understand how the model works, not only to support the CPA firms, but it also works to support them and giving them that true work-life balance that's usually nothing more than lip service at most CPA firms.
You know, and this just seems so brilliant. You know, how do you manage your capacity to do that? That must be a big part of it.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, I'm particularly proud of the fact that, again, we're a young organization, so we haven't necessarily had enough cycles to say what truly is our retention and or turnover mark. But when you look at the big four and you see in their own audit quality reports that 35% of their senior associates and senior managers and managers are turning over in a given year. And that obviously is a drastic increase from where it was even 5 years ago. You know, we have not experienced any turnover yet. And on top of that, every offer we've made to a candidate has been accepted. Okay. I don't know of any other CPA firm right now that could probably make that claim. From a capacity perspective, it's interesting because this is where we struggled going to the subscription model was what do we do in a situation where perhaps we are oversubscribed? Like right now, as we're recording, this is a historically busy time period for many CPA firms. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of demand going on right now. But what happens in our situation is we actually have a few different levels of membership. One is called, our annual subscribers. So our annual subscribers always get first priority in any given subscription week. Okay. And then we have what we call an A-lane upgrade, which basically takes our standard passes and gives that shared access that they're sharing with other CPA firms or companies becomes a private access model where they actually have access to our team Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday throughout the day. Okay. That becomes our second priority. And then our third priority is our standard shared access passes. So we consciously limit the number of passes we sell in any given week, because if we're going to sell a firm a pass, we want to make sure we're delivering solutions for them. So this is not, unfortunately, we're not robots, right? We're not the ChatGPT just yet in terms of the Audit Club. We are people and we have capacity constraints just like any other firm. But the way we manage that is we just say, look, we're going to limit the number of subscribers we have. Inevitably, that means we may have to turn down certain subscribers in a given week just based on prioritization. And that's just the reality of it until we have, enough bodies to go around. But as you know, it's very hard to find talent. And so we're capacity constrained just like any other CPA firm. But we're going to do our best to make sure these members are satisfied.
Well, that's really great. And, I wish that something like that had been around back when I had been trying to be an auditor. there were a couple of times when they said, oh, well, gee, we just lost our audit manager. Liz, you did a governmental audit a while ago. You can be the in charge for this one. And I'm like, I haven't audited for 3 years. What do you mean?
Yeah. And so, one of the things, you know, we do contractually make sure we put in our language is the fact that, you know, we operate with due professional care. We are obviously beholden to the standards, AICPA and PCOB. We're backed by a licensed accountancy corporation. So our reputation is on the line, right? And again, that's a differentiating point between us and other offshore service centers that are available out there. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a licensed accountancy corporation. We're backed by that, but we're also all based here in the United States. Okay. All of our people, our contracts are structured in a way where they're all encompassing, meaning if our career chief can deliver you a solution in the areas of accounting assurance, quality control, regulatory matters, or training, we will do it for you. But if we can't do it under due professional care, we're going to look to reassign resources and or just be honest with you that, hey, we can't be the be-all and end-all to everybody. So while we do have an all-encompassing approach, it's also constrained by the fact that we do obviously want to operate under due professional care.
That's good. That's really good. And that should be reassuring to anybody who's thinking of hiring you.
Yeah. Again, we're, well, like I said, we can't be the be-all and end-all to everybody. And that's important that we make that disclaimer up front, because some firms just assume that they can, you know, pick up the phone and on Monday they're going to have the resources they need on that given day. And like I said, we're not magicians, unfortunately, yet. But that's just the reality of the profession we're operating within. There's definitely a lot to know. And, you know, you can't possibly know everything. And so we shouldn't be claiming that we know everything as well. But granted, it's very difficult to find talent right now. So we always challenge these CPA firms and companies to say, hey, what are your other options right now? Right. And, you know, sure, you can call up a recruiter that doesn't really have a vested interest in who you ultimately have on your team. You can pay a pretty hefty headhunter fee, or you can invest those dollars in Audit Club and get access to an entire team of chiefs and crew that you can pick and play from whenever you decide.
That's probably a really good solution for a lot of firms. Now, most accounting firms rely on metrics like realization rate and billable hours, both of which I think are completely bogus. What are the metrics that you use to assess performance?
Yeah, I love this question too. One of the most frustrating things in our infancy was every single month running QuickBooks timesheet reports and sending those to firms and companies that we were supporting saying, hey, here's the number of hours we provided your firm during the month and here's what you have left, right? There was no value to that in my mind. Now, mm-hmm. We still get a lot of firms and companies say, well, how many billable hours are we getting? And we always say, look, this is an access model, no different than you subscribing to your gym or you basically providing, you know, paying an insurance premium, right? You're kind of guaranteeing that you're going to get access to the healthcare or access to the gym when you want it based on what you signed up for. It's the same concept with us. It's that peace of mind. It's that convenience. We do not reflect hours here at Audit Club. So we actually, none of our people reflect billable hours. Okay. It's irrelevant to us. And the reason it's irrelevant is because we are focused on delivering solutions. As I mentioned earlier, we have that solution scorecard, right? Especially in a day where our employees are dispersed across the United States in a remote environment, it is very difficult to understand what people are doing that you're leading. One of the ways we do that is through these solution scorecards that are sent to the CPA firm and or company at the end of each day. Each one of my chiefs or crew has to submit that. And so they're telling you at that point in time what they did in that given day. And we always say, guys, would you feel, if you were in their shoes, that you've given them enough value for what they've invested in you? So that's one of our metrics at the end of the day is the solution scorecards. We also have an employee weekly report that gets submitted directly up to me as well, where at the end of the week, they say, look, here's the contributions I made to our members. And here's the contributions I made to Audit Club internally. Okay. And here's the values that I espouse during the week and the contributions I make. And also, here's what I have planned for next week. And oh, by the way, what can Audit Club help you do better? And so we're getting that feedback mechanism constantly coming through every single week. So we're taking the pulse of our employees, we're understanding the value we're providing to our members, and we're also understanding what else can we do better to constantly up our game. Billable hours, completely irrelevant. We also and I spent a few years at the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board working on the Audit Quality Indicators Project. And one of the things that was very eye-opening to me was the fact that firms are very good about measuring the outputs, right? In other words, how many hours did they support a particular client for, or how many restatements did they have, or how many material weaknesses did they miss, okay? Or do they have any litigation, right? You can see those things on an output perspective. But going into an audit, the key differentiators are the inputs. It's the people side of it. So a lot of what the PCAOB was proposing in that eventually the concept release and now the proposed standard out there talks about the concept of audit quality indicators and measuring inputs. And a lot of this goes back to, I used to work for a gentleman named Bob Conway, who was a regional director at the PCAOB, former KPMG partner. And he was actually credited as the anonymous retired partner that submitted a recommendation to ACAP back in 2008, the committee, the Treadway Commission to Advance Audit Quality. And one of his suggestions was, look, guys, pilots have safe zones of operation, right? If a pilot all of a sudden steers to the left too much, a bell goes off, right? Same thing happens if you steer to the right too much, a whistle goes off, whatever it is, there's an alert. We don't have those same alerts, at least in local and regional firms, that tell you, hey, you've now spent 15 hours, this individual spent 15 hours today on your engagement. Don't you think they might need to have a little break to be able to be fresh and spot the issues? Right. There's no alert that goes off typically. Or, hey, your partner that's overseeing this engagement is also overseeing the office as a managing partner and has administrative duties. Well, should that be a flag? Right. All these sorts of things that go into telling you maybe they're not necessarily going to correlate exactly to the outputs and the audit quality, but they're generally going to give you some light in terms of where you may have a bust on an audit. So those are the things we look at internally is like, how many CPE hours are people getting? Okay. What's their hours per week? You know, again, we're 36 hours max because we want our people to be at their best and they need that rest. They need that, you know, time away so they can re-engage in their work that day. So there's a lot of other quantitative and qualitative metrics that we look at here in Audit Club to make sure we're performing at our peak. Billed hours is totally irrelevant to this all.
Yeah, I thought so too when I was in public accounting. You know, and I remember there were even quiet times of the year when I had a billable hours budget I had to get to. And, well, gee, you know, what can I do to stretch the work out? Yeah. Because, you know, maybe I only have, I have something I could do in 2 hours, but I need 4 hours. Well, can I stretch that out so that it looks better?
Yeah. And it's interesting you point that out because, I mean, I do think if you look at two things, we as CPAs are notoriously interested in the numbers, right? And it's ingrained within us. It's in our DNA. I get that, right? But we're focused on, in particular, two numbers, one of which is billable hours. The other one is the 150-hour educational requirement, both of which add nothing to the conversation, but are actually on two different fronts, detracting people from actually either going into the profession or making an exodus for people out of the profession, right? Because again, we say, look, get 150 hours. Doesn't matter where you get those extra 30 hours in. I came out of 120-hour education at Claremont McKenna College, graduated there, had an offer to start with PwC back in the day. And I was just focused on how do I get certified the fastest? So I ended up taking PowerPoint, Excel, volleyball, right? Just to get 30 credits because that was going to get my license the quickest. It didn't make me a better CPA, right? And so there's nothing empirical that says, other than maybe this gives you a leg up in terms of passing the exam, that it actually translates into better work product, better quality, all that sort of stuff. So we'd say, okay, get your 150 hours. And then once they do, we say, okay, now that you're in our firm, get your 2000 billable hours this year. And again, to your exact point, everyone's like, why am I doing this, right? So all of a sudden they start to worry about their billable hours. There's no, that does nothing to motivate anybody from an efficiency or even effectiveness standpoint, okay? So it gets people to be burnt out. They leave the profession, right? Or they decide, hey, look, maybe the grass is green. I'll become a corporate finance guy, or I'll do something else within accounting, or I'm going to leave accounting altogether. So in my mind, if you kill the billable hour and you kill the 150-hour requirement, you might actually end up saving the CPA profession.
I think you could be onto something there. Now, I came to accounting kind of late in life. So the 30 hours that I had to get just to get the credits so that I, the right classes, so I could sit for the CPA exam, that was on top of close to 200 credit hours that I had already earned from being a semi-professional student. But I can't say that that class I took in Russian or women's studies really helped me become a better CPA. Made me a more interesting person, maybe, but better.
It just amazes me. The whole 100, again, go on the 150 hour requirement. And there's been plenty of debate over the last few weeks in particular on whether that's a necessary thing or not. I think you know my view on it. I don't find it necessary. I do think, you know, auditing and accounting in general is an apprenticeship type concept where people learn on the job. Yeah. I will tell you, maybe I shouldn't admit this on the air, but I never took an auditing class in college.
Really?
Okay. So, and I was at a liberal arts college, did a lot of accounting classes where we wrote a lot of papers, things like that, but I never took auditing. And I didn't take, my first foray into auditing wasn't until I interned with PwC and started to realize, okay, how this makes sense. And on top of that, you know, I then, you know, did the Becker CPA review course for auditing. That's where I learned a little bit more about auditing, but never took an actual auditing class. And lo and behold, I've been in this profession 20 plus years. And I think I've done a decent job at being an auditor because of those people that have actually trained me in my years, informed me. Okay. But the 150 hour requirement to me, unless you're going to actually put some, you know, skin in it in terms of it's meaningful, you know, education that relates to what you're actually pursuing as a career, what's the point of it? It's just attracting people. It's an added cost. And the ironic thing is the people that actually put this rule into place, they're not holding themselves up to it. If you really believe in the 150 hours, then everyone in the profession should be going back there and get their 150 hours.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people who have taken that extra 30 hours and taken classes that actually do help them. But if there's no requirement as to the content, then I'm not quite sure what the point of it is.
I think it's just an odd barrier to entry that we've introduced that, again, has done probably more to damage the profession than it has done to help the profession. The flip side, like I talked about earlier, you know, that's the 150 hour requirement. The billable hour concept is also, again, what I think that drives people out of this business, right? And you think about, again, in the Big Four, they produce these audit quality reports every year. And because of the PCOB's efforts that I had started when I was back in the PCOB in 2011 and 12 on this concept of audit quality indicators, several of these firms are now reporting overtime hours per individual. Okay. And you can go right into their, you can Google this, PwC, EY, KPMG, a lot of the big players, they have their audit quality reports every single year on their audit profession. And, you know, if you look at one of the things they disclose is audit hours or overtime hours. And for PwC, and this is their 2022 audit quality report, audit associates are working 220 hours overtime, goes up to 256 for audit senior associates, goes up to 295 for audit directors and managers, and it goes up to 349 for audit partners and managing directors. EY is at 373 for audit partners and managing directors. You cannot tell me that the millennials and Gen Zs don't see that in the partners and go, why do I want to spend 15 years trying to make partner only to live a life that basically is, in essence, indentured servitude to the CPA firm?
I think you're right. You know, when I was contemplating what I would do with my accounting career, I looked at all the people above me and I thought, I don't really want their job. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So.
And it's important. A lot of this is all predicated back on the whole concept of commodity pricing, right? And because we as CPAs have done a really poor job of differentiating ourselves, you go to all, you know, 10 different CPA websites, they all look, feel, and smell the same, right? And the customer has no idea what they're actually buying when they buy an audit, when they buy a review, or even if they buy a compilation. And they don't care whether it's EY, KPMG, Moss Adams, you name it, whatever firm it is. It doesn't matter. They just need that one or two page report at the end. Okay. They don't understand the inputs. They don't understand the process and they don't understand the value behind it. And that's because we as a profession have basically dug ourselves our own grave. And we said, look, we're going to go out there and sell this audit for this. And Joe CPA, he'll do it for $1,000 less. And now Mark over there will do it for $2,000 less. So they compete on price as opposed to actually the value behind, even though it's compliance, there is a value behind the audit itself. That commodity pricing means your revenues are in essence kind of capped unless you get more volume. And now all of a sudden, when your biggest expense is labor, well, this is a reason why people have 370 hours overtime, because the firm doesn't want to see that fixed cost salary all of a sudden becoming a variable expense that then eats into partner income per share. So it's a very greedy, archaic model that I think a lot of the millennials and Generation Z are starting to wise up on, and they're starting to see through it and going, guys, you can't fool me at the end of the day. This is a ruse, and I'm going to get out of here while I have my own sanity still left.
Yeah. And another thing that always puzzled me about the billable hour, especially in audit, was that most audits are on a fixed fee basis. So what do billable hours have to do with anything?
They really are just a measurement, in essence, of productivity that people are hung on to, right? This is spawning out of an industrial revolution type concept where people had a 40-hour work week, and now all of a sudden you can see how somebody is productive because they're on the clock for 8 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours a day. But it doesn't matter. And most firms, you know, again, I would even cast doubt on what's been reported in these audit quality reports of 349 hours, because a lot of that time gets eaten and underreported. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing those overtime hours, I mean, these are probably painting the rosy picture, but the reality is probably even far north of that. Okay. So these hours mean nothing. And, you know, I think what often happens is that these firms budget these engagements, and then all of a sudden they don't even look at the actual hours. And when they do, they try to justify, oh, well, why was that an anomaly? And how do I exclude it from next year's fee proposal? Because another client won't pay for it. So it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy that they can't get out of. And, you know, we've talked to a number of CPA firms where you look at their audit practice and you're like, nobody's going to want to buy this. Right. And you almost have to start from scratch because you're so far deep right now in terms of your profitability that even if you were to ask for 10, 20% increases year over year, it'd probably still take you 5 to 7 years to get out of that hole. So you're better off just scrapping it and entertaining new prospects that come along under a different pricing model.
I think you're right there. Now, one excuse that some audit partners throw up to counter changes in the way that they perform audits is, well, we'll never get through peer review if we do it that way. What is your response to that complaint?
Interesting question. Obviously, a lot of what we do is predicated on standards and making sure we comply with the standards. I will say, you know, we definitely have a number of inquiry calls with CPA firms and companies that are looking for support. And they question, again, this is a different model. Not everybody gets it. And so we struggle sometimes with those types of CPA firms because we don't see eye to eye in terms of how we bring value versus what they think it should be. Okay. So in those situations where peer review is questioning, well, you got to do it this way. You also have to look at who's leading peer review these days as well. And that's a whole nother demographic where that number is also phasing way down the wrong way, right? And we at Audit Club have had conversations with AICPA saying, if anybody could probably do effective peer reviews, it's the people in our organization, just based on our experience, you know, whether it's national quality office folks, national office folks with big four firm roles, PCOB experience, like we live and breathe audit quality on a day-to-day basis. But they've said, you know what, Audit Club, appreciate your commentary, but you do know that you have to actually issue your own audit reports to be able to consider a peer and therefore perform a peer review. So again, trying to solve a problem with a creative solution and it's immediately vetoed because it's not that traditional way of thinking, right? And this goes to your question, peer review challenging something because it's done differently. I think every firm should welcome that challenge because when someone asks a question what you're doing, it means you're doing something differently. And as long as you're thinking about risk the right way and managing the risk within your practice, then you should have the freedom and flexibility to introduce new ways of doing things. if we don't do that, then again, we lend ourselves to just basically being either disrupted or dead at some point in time, because we basically have conformed to how we've done things historically in the past.
Absolutely. Now, what are some of the other roadblocks to change in public accounting in general and in audit specifically?
Yeah, I think, again, it's probably a little bit of the old guard at this point, right? Where they're hanging on because, you know, they're content making their average $600,000 of partner income per share. And they're resistant to change because in their mind, it's not broken. But what they're failing to do is actually get the feedback, get the ideas from the junior ranks and say, hey, tomorrow's firm should be fundamentally different than yesterday's firm, right? I mean, if you were, you know, think about a computer that you bought in the 1990s. Obviously, that's a lot different than the computer you have today. We all agree on that, right? Mm-hmm. And the same, if we're not progressing as a CPA firm, which most firms, I don't think they're progressing the way they think they are, you know, they're going to be a little bit, they're going to age out, and they either need to start adapting to a new way of doing things or risk being disrupted. Okay. And that's just the reality of it. So that's one of the things is people think if it's not broke, nothing to fix. Okay. I think the other part is these firms are so knee deep in work right now that they don't even have the time to come up for air to listen to a podcast like this or read an article about how to reinvent their practices, okay? But I'll tell you, who's reading and who's listening are tomorrow's leaders.
Yes.
And they're going to outsmart the leadership of today by inventing and reinventing how things are done, okay? So these firm leaders, I think, are a lot of the guilt, you know, blame rests on them, unfortunately. The other part is the technology, and this goes back to just being knee deep. They are not the ones that utilize the technology. And so you have a disconnect between the buyer of the technology versus the user of the technology. And until you have alignment between the buyer and the user, it becomes a very difficult selling proposition. And these firms are reluctant to make that investment because how they're compensated from a retirement perspective is based on their income and their billable book of business, unfortunately. So why, and selfishly, as a partner, let's say I'm 65 years old and about to exit this profession, why do I want to make an investment if it's going to be at the expense of what I'm earning in my retirement?
Right.
So there's just this conflicting, you know, reality of the space we're dealing with that, again, is a function of the current guard that eventually will retire out and leave a new generation to follow. But in the meantime, you're starting to see some movement from a disruptor level at, you know, more innovative firms that are coming along and saying, look, it doesn't have to be done this way.
Yes. And I've talked to people who have been trying to do different things in audit for more than 20 years. So there are people out there. There just haven't been quite enough of them.
Yeah, and I do think, I mean, technology plays a really critical part, and we've strategically aligned ourselves with different, you know, software and technology innovators in the space, you know, the likes of AuditSite, which was, you know, just recently named as part of the CPA.com Accelerator Program. A couple of great guys, T.C. Whitaker and Jonathan Womack from AuditSite, helping to automate work paper generation, right? And there's the guys from AuditFile who have created a fantastic platform that we've also partnered with, kind of combining the technology with the resource side of things. Okay. So we are, in my mind, what we've done, and, you know, more to come in a couple of weeks on this, but Audit Club is basically established an infrastructure that firms can rely on. Okay. And so as we think about what appeals to the generation coming before beneath us, right? The millennials, late millennials and the early Gen Xers, or sorry, Gen Zers, what appeals to them, right? You think about, these are the folks that are, you know, watching YouTube. Okay? These are the folks that are listening to the podcast, right? They're listening for disruptive influences, and they appreciate the fact that Uber came along. They appreciate that Airbnb came along. They understand subscriptions. They understand access, and they understand infrastructure. If you can harness all those things together, you ultimately create an environment where perhaps the antiquated CPA firm gives way to what we call an alternative CPA firm.
We can only hope. We can only hope. Now, besides hiring Audit Club, what are some other ways that younger, more innovative-minded auditors can bring about change? You've already touched on a few of these things. What are some things they can do in their firms now?
Yeah, I think, again, you need to have a proactive mindset. You need to question the why. And, you know, I even go back to my days when I first started PwC, I was always asking why we were doing something. Okay. And I think a lot of people take it for granted because they're rolling forward prior work papers and they're copy and pasting, and then they're just moving on. Right. But they don't really challenge the why behind something is done. And I think that critical mindset, that questioning mindset, is something that a young individual that's just starting up in the audit ranks can really help benefit and propel their career. Right. And again, it's not just asking why, but also you can ask the question, but also come up with perhaps what you think maybe a viable solution is. That asking the question plus solutions-oriented thinking goes a long way. I will also say is these individuals shouldn't be afraid when they learn of something that's out there in the marketplace, whether it's a technology, whether it's a different way of doing things, is they should be raising that up the flag and letting others be informed about it. Okay, getting the information and saying, hey, this is why this can truly help change the game for us as auditors in the trenches. So a lot of them are, again, they're just taking orders from the top, right? And they're not actually challenging the authority because they've been brought into this saying, hey, we shouldn't challenge the authority. But I think, again, the only way you get better at something is to have everybody on deck asking the why and figuring out how to do something different and better.
I think that's a really critical thing, is to ask why you're doing something. Because the way that I learned to audit was, thrown, well, here's last year's work papers, which were paper back then, and just roll them all forward, do what they did last year. And I'm like, okay, you know, I just going through it. And I didn't know what was most important, what was not important. I just didn't really have the context because nobody had really sat down with me and taught me how to audit and what that meant. So yeah. I'm really glad that the younger generation is feeling empowered to ask, well, why are we doing it this way?
Yeah, I think, again, the future leaders of tomorrow's firms are asking the why, but there's also, you know, a generation that sits within these firms that is going to continue to just go through the motions. And I think that's unfortunate. You know, you have to really think about, again, that going back to the why, is you need to really challenge yourself to do things differently. And again, if you don't do that, you're going to kind of continue to operate under the status quo model. And that's just not healthy, right? And again, going back to, you know, how do you find a new model or a new way of doing things? It's because you're trying to build a better mousetrap, right? These CPA firms have been operating for the most part for the same way, under that traditional pyramid model for a number of years. And their biggest advantage is their leverage model, right? The more people they can leverage, the more money goes up to the pyramid, right? And unfortunately, these firms also don't give, because they're so focused, going back to the billable hour concept, is they don't give their people capacity to actually innovate, right? One of the things, you know, we do here at Audit Club is we have a 75-25 rule, which is very similar to what Google has, right? Where we say, look, 75% of your given week should be devoted to member activities. Whether we have subscribers or not, we should constantly be finding things that actually bring value to our subscriber base. The other 25% of the time should be things that we need to focus on internally here at Audit Club. In other words, bring me some innovative ideas. What are you doing to help elevate our profile to be a brand ambassador? Well, what's happening is these people are saying, look, you've got an 11-hour chargeable hour requirement. Tell me when, with the rest of your day, how are you going to devote anything to business development, to improving our firm, to innovating what we do? They just don't have, they're not given the capacity nor the freedom, because there's no actual value placed on those types of activities. And that's really, really unfortunate. And it stalls the innovation that our profession needs.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many discussions I had with partners and people at firms when I tell them, well, look, there are other people doing different things, and this is the way of the future. And they'd say, well, Yeah, that sounds kind of interesting. Maybe I'll do it when I have more time. Maybe I'll look into it then. And well, when are you going to have time?
Yeah. And the hard, you know, it's interesting because we've been on firms for months now saying, hey, look, you know, we're a subscription model, week to week flexibility, the fractional auditors you need. But end of the day, you also have to get in there and sign a contract and do your part, which we've automated the heck out of and made it super simple for them to do that. But we still get texts on a Friday saying, hey, do you have any resources we can have? We'd love to have two of your folks starting on Monday. And it's like, I'd love to, again, love to be a magician, but that's just not simply how things work in this business, unfortunately. So, and again, it's because now they finally come up for air and they said, oh, I have a problem and I need a solution, but they need to proactively plan for contingencies. And most of these firms, again, because of how they're structured and incentivized, would rather their existing people absorb the additional work, knowing full and well that that individual or people are likely going to now be burnt out by the time it comes to the end of March or the end of April and exit your firm. So it's a short-term solution that has long-term implications. And I don't think enough of them see that far ahead. And they just assume that they're going to constantly be able to replace these bodies. And what you're seeing right now is that that is just simply not the case anymore in public accounting.
And not to mention the risk of errors. If you've got three burned out people who are looking at this work paper and they are all exhausted, how likely is it that some big mistake might get through?
Yeah. But and again, part of this is a time crunch as well. And it's unfortunate that, you know, most companies out there have a December 31st year end and they have either bank requirements or the SEC has, you know, their 60-day deadline for large accelerated filers to get a 10K filed, you know, and I do take exception to the SEC and even the PCAOB because they have a part to play in this as well, right? It's not just on the firms, but think about the regulatory bodies, and I'll maybe from the public perspective here, the SEC, when I first started public accounting, there was a 90-day window to file a 10K. And that was back before we had as many standards from an accounting perspective and as many standards as we have now with the PCAOB and the AICPA. So the complexity has only been magnified, but the deadlines have only been shrunken even further, okay? And so you got to go, guys, at some point, they also need to look themselves in the mirror and go, what can we do to help improve audit quality, right? And you've seen, I don't know if you've seen the headlines, but the last, you know, probably 7-8 months since the new regime of the PCAOB has taken foot at the PCAOB, they have been on a deliberate campaign of issuing sanctions, weeding out the bad actors. I've got no problem with that whatsoever. But I do worry, have they thought about the unintended consequences of that in light of a talent shortage, right? That people go, look, we have too many conversations with members of ours that say, look, we're looking to get out of the PCAOB space now. How do we do that? Because they've been, the fear of them has been struck inside of them. And they're like, look, we're not in this anymore because there's too much regulatory risk. Well, who's going to be left to do these audits of these public clients? Just the big four? And is that really what we want in America?
I don't know. You know, that seems to be the model that we're moving towards.
And that's why you see the rise, you know, the mega mergers that are happening as well. And, you know, I think if I look out 5 years, I would love to be able to see that firms are able to do more with less individuals because they have more creative solutions, whether it's technology or resource angles to tap into, to where in theory, anybody, just like you see a, you know, people spinning up tax shingles and being able to, you know, have their own business as a tax practitioner. Why can't the same be done for those in the audit space?
That's a good question. But, you know, the audit is the one area where by statute, CPAs have the monopoly.
They do. And they should be commanding a price premium for that, and they don't.
Good point. Good point. Now, I want you to get out your crystal ball and try to imagine what you see in the future for audit. What is on the horizon?
Yeah, we've got a lot of exciting things on the horizon here at Audit Club in particular, but I look at the profession more broadly. There has been a concerted effort towards people moving to CAS and client accounting advisory, whatever you want to call it. and away from the compliance exercise because they feel like eventually it'll be, you know, automated for the most part. And mm-hmm. I will say that at the end of the day, there is a value proposition behind the audit. The audit is sorely needed to provide trust in society. And I think about, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. ChatGPT and all those sort of things with artificial intelligence. It's still the user of those tools needs to decipher the true information within it. Right. And it's the same thing with audit. Audit and at-test services provide trust in information that is disseminated to users of that information.
Right.
You can automate certain parts of it, and that's happening through the likes of, like I said, audit site, audit file, making the audit process smoother and simpler. But you also will always need resources to be able to make those judgments where it's not an area of black and white, and everything in auditing is not. I do think we've heard it for years. We're on a pathway towards continuous auditing, right? Where everything on a mm-hmm. month-to-month basis. And I think that'll provide more valuable perspective to companies engaging with their auditors when they're able to take that data and say, hey, here's some anomalies. This is what it means about your business, right? And becoming more of an advisor from that perspective. So I do think that's the evolution of auditing and where we're headed. But I also worry that we are on a path of self-destruction to a degree. Yes. And there's a lot of talk right now about how do we make change and what do we do? But unfortunately, what we need is a little bit less talk and a lot more action. So everything we do at Audit Club is connected back to our mission to make accounting and auditing better. And I know firms are out there speaking about some of these issues, but they are, in essence, carriers and or battleships that are very hard to maneuver. So I think what you're going to start to see is the rise of, in my mind, micro firms that can band together and ultimately deliver quality assurance services for small businesses and in a different way of doing things, harnessing technology, harnessing alternative structures, right? That to me is mm-hmm. a pathway towards solving the talent crisis, but also creating a better product at the end of the day as well. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but those are just some of the thoughts that I have initially that come to mind in terms of where we're headed.
And I think that some of those solutions will also go a long way to solving the talent crisis.
I think so. I absolutely agree. I think one of the things we think about and look at is the idea that we're in an era where people really want to be a gig worker. Okay. But mm-hmm. what happens, a lot of people, again, they get ticked off at public accounting, they're tired of their auditing firm, and they end up, you know, doing corporate finance, or they do something else, or they just get out of it altogether, right? Or they end up going to the gig economy. So they go into Upwork, and all of a sudden they end up just basically trading time for money because they don't know how to run their own small business to be able to help them be an entrepreneur right. with an audit. So I think from a talent perspective, the profession needs to do a better job of trying to figure out creative solutions that actually incentivize and attract people that are thinking of exiting the profession. You know, 75% of CPAs hit the retirement age in 2020. You have hardly anybody going into accounting anymore. So we are on this self-destructive journey here if we don't figure out a better way of doing this.
I think you're absolutely right. And I hate to end our conversation on such a down note, but maybe that will incentivize some people to take action.
Yeah. I mean, you, the negatives sometimes draw out the inspiration, right? And so if people know there's a problem, yes. what you want people doing is focusing on figuring out a solution. It's enough to talk about the problem, but what are the actual creative steps firms and individuals can take to actually create and affect change in this particular profession we're in right now?
That's exactly right. Change, 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 change. Now, this has been great, Chris. I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to talk to me.
Of course.
If listeners want to connect with you, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, they can find me on LinkedIn, obviously through Audit Club, or they can also just email me directly, Chris, C-H-R-I-S, at auditclub.cpa.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Chris, and you have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Liz. We'll talk soon. All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.